Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Dorothy Gundy, John Russell, and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Concerns are growing that Britain's withdrawal from the European Union will cause economic problems for both sides. Making matters worse is the possibility that some European countries may see their economies decrease in the coming months. This week, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson moved to suspend Parliament for weeks. The goal of the action is to prevent lawmakers from passing legislation to block the country from leaving the EU without negotiating an agreement. The time limit for Brexit, as it is called, is October 31st. Negotiators have failed to reach an agreement in the 3 years since a majority of the British people voted to leave the EU in 2016. Many experts now believe a so-called no-deal Brexit is likely to happen. Economists and business experts say the result of a no-deal Brexit would cause widespread problems and disorder. Problems could include new taxes on trade, slower movement of people and goods at borders, and problems with licenses to do business in other countries. Britain's withdrawal comes at an uncertain time for the EU. The trade dispute between the United States and China has already raised concerns for Europe. And Germany, which depends on exports and manufacturing, is facing the possibility of a recession. Germany could be hit quite badly if a no-deal Brexit occurs in 2 months' time. That is what Andrew Kenningham said. He is an economist with Capital Economics, a research group in London. Germany is Europe's largest economy. From April to June, its economy shrank. Many economists believe the same will happen from July to September. That means the country would be in a recession as a no-deal Brexit takes place. Some economists also predict that Britain could fall into a recession as well. They estimate the British economy would shrink by about 3%. Italy's economy did not grow at all from April to June and could also face a recession. Supporters of Brexit, however, say companies have had more than 3 years to prepare. Finally leaving, they say, would remove uncertainty. Nigel Driffield is a professor of international business at Warwick Business School in Britain. He said it could take months or even years for terms of trade to be fully agreed on between Britain and the EU. He said some companies could prepare by planning for the future. However, suppose another supplier, perhaps in another country, fails to prepare. Your part of the value chain still grinds to a halt, and your customer still stops ordering. What do you do? Driffield asked. Driffield expects a no-deal Brexit to lead to 5 to 10 years of negotiations over trade. That is about as long as negotiations with Canada took to complete. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
An international wildlife conference has approved resolutions aimed at protecting endangered animal and plant species. It also heard about the illegal international trade that threatens their survival. Delegates have been attending the conference this week in Geneva, Switzerland. They represent countries that signed an international agreement on trade in endangered species. It is called CITES, short for the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. The United Nations reports that about 1 million animal and plant species are threatened and could disappear forever. The conference approved resolutions aimed at protecting several species of shark and other animals, including the giraffe. The conference changed the trade rules for many wildlife species threatened by overfishing, overharvesting, and overhunting. It also expanded the ability to fight illegal trade. Yvonne Higuero is CITES Secretary General. She told reporters that illegal traders are a serious problem. She praised the conference's delegates.
For example, you adopted decisions on strengthening enforcement efforts for tortoises and freshwater turtles. You will also support efforts to tackle illegal trade in the subregions of West and Central Africa. This illegal trade affects elephant ivory and species such as pangolins, parrots, and rosewood.
Higuero also praised the conference for establishing the city's Big Cat Task Force. The task force, she said, has powers to improve enforcement, fight illegal trade, and work with others on protecting tigers, lions, cheetahs, jaguars, and leopards. The illegal trade in wildlife is estimated to be worth up to $20 billion a year. The move to protect giraffes brought praise from wildlife activists and criticism from some African countries. Giraffes are only found in Africa. People often see these animals at zoos and think they are abundant, notes Susan Lieberman of the Wildlife Conservation Society. And in southern Africa, they may be doing okay, but giraffes are critically endangered. Lieberman said that giraffes were mostly at risk in parts of West, Central, and East Africa. A leading African conservationist said the new protections could help stop giraffe population loss, as the move would help to document the number of giraffes. The giraffe has experienced over 40% loss in the last 30 years, noted Philip Maruthi, of the African Wildlife Foundation. If that continues, it means that we are headed toward extinction. Not all African countries supported the move, however. Marus Msua is director of wildlife at the Tanzanian Ministry of Natural Resources and Tourism. He said Tanzania has a stable and increasing population of giraffes. CITES says the population of wild giraffes is actually much smaller than that of wild African elephants. We're talking about a few tens of thousands of giraffes, and we're talking about a few hundreds of thousands of African elephants, said Tom Demulinar, Chief of Scientific Services at CITES. With fewer giraffes than elephants in Africa, it was a no-brainer to simply regulate giraffe exports, said Tanya Sanarib. She is International Legal Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. The United States is the world's biggest buyer of giraffe products, conservationists said. Sanarib said it was important for the U.S. government to act on its own. It's still urgent for the Trump administration to protect these animals under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, she said in a statement. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Imagine you are watching the 1991 American film City Slickers. It tells the story of an unhappy man and two of his friends. The men agree they need a short break from their day-to-day problems. So, they decide to go on a trip to the southwestern United States. In the movie, you hear the following lines.
When you're a teenager, you think you can do anything, and you do. Your 20s are a blur. 30s, you raise your family, you make a little money, and you think to yourself, what happened to my 20s?
Our report today is not about aging. Instead, it is about a strange verb, make. Have you ever wondered about the verb make? Have you noticed that it has different meanings in different situations? On Everyday Grammar, we will explore three meanings of the word make. We will learn how make has different meanings depending on the noun phrase that follows it in a sentence.
Make is an irregular verb. Unlike many other verbs, the past tense is not formed by adding an ed at the end. Instead, the past tense is made. The literal meaning of make is to produce or create something. However, this meaning is not common in everyday speech. Instead, English speakers often use make to suggest different meanings. They show these meanings by using one of a number of noun phrases after the verb. Together, these make plus noun phrase structures have an idiomatic meaning. In other words, the structure make plus a noun phrase often has a meaning other than what the individual words suggest. There are many different meanings of the structure make plus a noun phrase. Two grammar experts, Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber, have identified over one dozen commonly used make plus noun phrase expressions. Today, we will study three of them. These structures are all polite and can be used in almost any situation, at school, at work, or among friends and family.
One common meaning of make is this: to perform an action. Make has this meaning when it is followed by a noun phrase such as the bed or a telephone call. Here are two examples. You might hear a parent tell a child,
"You need to make your bed."
Or you might hear someone say,
"I would like to make a phone call."
In both examples, the verb make suggests performing an action. So, when an English speaker says, "make the bed," he or she means to perform the action of straightening the bed cover and sheets. When someone says, "make a phone call," he or she means the act of going to the phone, calling the number, and speaking to another person.
A second meaning of the verb make is to plan or decide to do something. Make has this meaning when followed by a noun phrase such as an appointment, plans to, or a decision to. Imagine you hear this short phone call.
"Good afternoon. This is Dr. Smith's office."
"Good afternoon. I would like to make an appointment with Dr. Smith."
"I'm sorry. He's not available until Friday. Would you like to make an appointment for this Friday?"
"I don't think that will work. I've already made plans to go out of town."
In the exchange, you heard two examples of make plus a noun phrase. The words make an appointment mean to plan to meet with another person. When the speaker says, "I've already made plans to go out of town," what she means is that she has already decided to do something, go out of town. You will hear this structure often in other situations, such as in a news report or on a television show. Almost every day, news agencies report, "The president has made a decision to," or "The committee has made plans to." Now you know that they have the basic meaning of planning or deciding to do something.
A third common meaning of make is this: to earn money. Make has this meaning when followed by noun phrases such as a living, money, or a profit. So, for example, a student might say, "Now that I've finished school, I have to make a living." A business person might explain to a financial specialist, "My business made a profit last year." In both cases, make means the act of earning money. There was an example of this meaning at the beginning of our report.
"When you're a teenager, you think you can do anything, and you do. Your 20s are a blur. 30s, you raise your family, you make a little money, and you think to yourself, what happened to my 20s?
Now that you have learned about a few meanings of the verb make, you will have to make an attempt to learn a few other possible meanings of it. The next time you are watching an American film or television broadcast, try to find examples of make plus a noun phrase. Ask yourself how the speakers are using make and what nouns or noun phrases go with the verb. Learning these idiomatic meanings of make is not easy. However, with training and effort, you can make progress. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm John Russell.
The state of Utah is home to 5 major national parks. They are among the most famous parks in the United States. Our national parks journey brings us to the southeastern part of the state. Here you will find narrow canyons, steep cliffs, and hidden river valleys. Welcome to Zion National Park.
Zion sits within a desert landscape. The 260-kilometer-long Virgin River runs through it. It provides water for more than 1,000 kinds of plants to grow and over 100 kinds of animals to live, including the desert tortoise, desert bighorn sheep, and mountain lions. River water has also carved out the area's spectacular canyons and gorges. One of them, called Zion Canyon, stretches more than 20 kilometers through the park. In some places, it is more than 600 meters deep. At its most narrow point, it is just 6 meters across. Zion is one of the 10 most visited parks in the country. Travelers from America and around the world come here to explore its canyons, climb its steep walls, and walk its dramatic trails.
Zion's extraordinary beauty affected early Mormon settlers. Members of the religious group came to the area beginning in the 1850s. They thought it looked like heaven. They named the land after a place from the Bible, Zion. Zion means sanctuary or refuge in ancient Hebrew. Mormons were not, of course, the first people to explore the area. Experts say humans first arrived around 12,000 years ago. They hunted very large animals, like mammoths, giant sloths, and camels. Climate change and overhunting caused these animals to die out about 8,000 years ago. Humans changed their methods. They hunted smaller animals and gathered other food. Some 2,000 years ago, a culture centered on what we now call Zion began to form. Scientists know these people as the Virgin Anasazi. They settled in the area and grew crops. They used the water from the Virgin River and depended on the rich diversity of native plants and animals. Over time, many Native American groups called the area home, including the Southern Paiute. The Southern Paiutes called the area Makuntuweap. In their language, the name meant Straight Canyon. The United States Congress moved to protect the area beginning in the early 1900s. In 1909, it became a national monument. It was called Makuntuweap National Monument. President William Taft established the national monument. He described the land as a labyrinth of remarkable canyons with highly ornate and beautifully colored walls, in which are plainly recorded the geological events of past ages. In 1918, the National Monument became a national park. And in 1919, Congress changed its name to Zion, the name used by the Mormons.
Today, almost 3 million people visit Zion National Park each year. Driving is restricted in much of the park during busy months. Instead, visitors travel in small buses that take them to areas where they can walk on paths into the wild areas. Walking is the best way to explore Zion. The park offers visitors many different kinds of paths. Some are short and easy. One easy walk is almost 2 kilometers. It takes hikers to a clear pool of water and waterfalls. Other hikes take most people all day to complete. Some are not advisable for people who are afraid of high places. A hike called Angel's Landing is considered one of the most exciting hikes in America. The trail leads to the top of a rock formation that stands more than 450 meters above the canyon floor. Toward the top of the rock, the walking path becomes extremely narrow. On both sides are very steep cliffs. Hikers can hold on to a rope for increased safety. Most hikers say the views from Angel's Landing make the difficult and dangerous experience worth it. Some visitors favor the lower parts of Zion National Park. One popular area is known as the Narrows. The Narrows is the narrowest part of Zion Canyon. The area has extremely tall canyon walls and unusual hanging gardens. These green areas of wildflowers, ferns, and mosses grow out of the sandstone walls. If you want to explore the Narrows, you must be ready to get wet. Hiking in the Narrows means walking next to, and even in, the Virgin River. If water levels are high, walking in the river can be extremely difficult. Sometimes, hikers may be waist high in water.
Even near the canyon floor, hikes at Zion can be dangerous. The great amount of rock in the area does not absorb water. As a result, sudden floods, called flash floods, are a serious threat. People can help prepare themselves as much as possible for the dangers of Zion National Park at the visitor center. But the risks come with great rewards. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.